How many of you had ever heard of Chalaka before today? I heard about it several years ago, but I have not celebrated it. I'm not quite sure what it looks like to celebrate it, except to light a candle and remember, but today's Time for All Ages has given me a start. I love that insert in the order of service, and as I think you know by now, I think it needs a different name. As we delve into this month's theme of mystery, I want to invite you to pick up your hymnals again. Many of you are familiar with this hymnal, but for those who aren't, I want to give you a short tutorial. Turn all the way to the, almost all the way to the back section, maybe to the fives and six or seven hundreds, and you'll see there that there are readings. There was someone who said the other week, I had no idea there were all these readings in the back of this hymnal, and they're really lovely, and I wanted to let you know that those are there, and not to be read during service while I'm preaching, but, you know, at some other opportune time, I would love for you to peruse that. It's organized, if you go a little more to the back, it's organized, and you can find things with indices in the hymnal, and you can do it by the first line of the hymn, by author. The readings also have an index. There's even a section, if you see a section with all the numbers in it, that's it's the meters of the hymn. So you can look at a hymn, and there are numbers at the very bottom of the page. There's a number, and then you can go to the back and find that number, and you can see what other tunes those words may fit with. So, isn't that interesting? So, when this hymnal first came out, I took one look at it and I bought my own copy there and then. For many years, and even still, it has been my religious text. I still have that very hymnal that I bought all those years ago. It's the one that I use for service preparation. It was before the sixth source was added. So flip all the way to the front again where we found those principles earlier in those first few pages. And if you look at the bottom of the page, you'll see the sources that our religious tradition draws upon. And in this hymnal, there, how many sources are there in the hymnals that you have, in the hymnal that you have? You can just count them. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. There are six, okay. In the hymnal that I have up here that I looked in today, there were only five. What is that sixth one? Will somebody read it out loud? Leah, it looks like you have it. Yes. So there are seven principles and six sources listed, and the principles are what we covenant to affirm and promote, and the sources are what we draw upon in order to do that. There was quite the brouhaha back in the day over whether or not we needed that sixth source listed. Did earth-centered traditions need to be named, or were they included already in one of the other sources? We'll get back to that in a little bit. Unitarian Universalists value deeds over creeds, and you can see that as you look through that, through the principles. We value how we live, our actions, over what we believe. And we covenant to affirm and promote. Now, what that means is, you'll notice that it says that our congregations covenant to affirm and promote. And that, in order to be part of the Unitarian Universalist Association, we could be a congregation that does not covenant to affirm and promote those seven principles, but we couldn't be a member of the Unitarian Universalist Association if we did that. That also means that the congregations agree to affirm and promote those principles, but it doesn't mean that we as individuals have to do that. So we believe in deeds, not creeds. So I just did a belief thing, which is probably not true. But in general, Unitarian Universalists are more about what we do and how we are in the world than what we believe about religion or about God or about any beliefs, right? So we covenant, we agree to, we agree about what that is between us. We agree about what are, about higher priorities and values. And one of the reasons that we come to church, one of the reasons we are in religious community, is to be reminded of the higher aspirations and our values, you know, just in case we would forget what those are, right? So in our first principle, to affirm the inherent worth and dignity of every person, we may find ourselves set free in some ways from those Calvinistic notions of unworthiness and inherent sinfulness. Now, we may not actively believe that. We may not have grown up believing those things, right? If you grew up Unitarian Universalist, right, you didn't necessarily grow up believing in that sort of inherent sinfulness. But I am telling you that we live in a culture whose the dominant culture here in the United States is Christianity, and that very much has a Calvinistic bent to it that says we are inherently sinful. So, but Unitarians and Universalists say, no, no, we believe in the inherent worth and the inherent dignity of each person, and that every person can be honored, and that there is a fundamental interdependence of human life. And that comes from Reverend Sarah Lammert. And she says when she, the first time she walked into a Unitarian Universalist church and she was listening to the sermon, what basically they were talking about the first principle and it, and said, come as you are and be welcome. Here you can be yourself. Here you can continue the journey. William Ellery Channing, one of our forebears, says, there's a spark of the divine in all of us. That's what this first principle means. And that we must be aware of the dangers of making this principle too much about the I, too much about the individual, and remember that we are a collective. It's not all about us, in other words. It's not about you. It's not about me either. It's about all of us together recognizing our shared humanity and our shared divinity, not just here, but beyond these walls. And that's what I think these principles that we hold dear, it looks like it's cold. Could you turn up the heat back there? Thank you. I see several people rubbing their hands together and shivering. Marco's got it. It's on an app. Yeah, it's on an app. So all those years ago, or a few years ago, when that young adult, I don't know the name of the person, decided to do this, that he needed a UU holiday, something to celebrate, then that was what he was looking at, was all of this as a collective. And a way to ritualize and give meaning to that, right? Well, in 1998, sociologist Robert Bella spoke at the Unitarian Universalist Association's General Assembly. So once a year business meeting of all the churches in the association. He encouraged us to flip the placement of the first and the seventh principle. He said that recognizing the interdependent web of all existence should be first before anything else, that we're born helpless and dependent, and only through the love of others will we ever become autonomous selves. But these two principles are inextricably linked. I think of them as the foundational pillars upon which all the other principles rest in an arc. As much as I love alone time, I need other people. Even as much as I sometimes want to think that I don't. But we are social creatures. The self just doesn't exist really outside of community and relationship. We are who we are because of our relationship to others and our environment. We're all part of that greater wholeness, the combined sparks of who we are. The first principle sets us free by affirming that at the heart of life, our very lives abides a transforming and sustaining love, that it's inherent in each of us, this transforming and sustaining love that calls not for belief, but for action, for covenant. How do we want to be with each other? How will we interact with each other and with the planet? What will we do? My intention today was to talk briefly about each of those principles and then wrap it up in a nice bow about the mystery of relationship and the interconnectedness of it. I'm not going to be able to do that probably, but I can't give each of these principles the attention that it deserves all in one sermon. In that mysterious way of birthing a sermon, something else happened. Mystery flowed in, and this UU holiday, Chalukah, or illuminations, or luminescence, or whatever we would want to call it. All those have been used, by the way. Whatever we want to call these next 7 days that were created by this young adult layperson who was looking for a ritual to mark the significance of their faith to them and their community, what it's about is meaning. They're looking for meaning, and isn't that the essence of who we are as humans? We look for meaning and miracles amid the mystery. We look for ways to soothe our souls, to heal our hearts, to find beauty and stay connected. There's a mystery to relationship, as most of you who are or have been in long-term relationships know. There's a mystery about how to navigate those. Sometimes my husband and I look at each other and say, hardest thing we've ever done is be in relationship. And it isn't just those types of partnerships and relationships either. It's almost any relationship that goes deeper than surface level that requires more of us. And here in this community, especially if we go beyond the surface, it can get really hard. But isn't that the point? We can do hard things. We can go deeper. We can trust deeply and love fiercely. And how do we do that without interactions with others and a willingness to love each other through whatever may come? Remember how we added that sixth source, right? There used to be five sources, and we added a sixth one. Well, there's a proposal now for an eighth principle, and here's the wording. We covenant to affirm and promote journeying towards spiritual wholeness by working to build a diverse, multicultural, beloved community by our actions that accountably dismantle racism and other oppressions in ourselves and our institutions. Let me read it again. Journeying toward spiritual wholeness by working to build a diverse, multicultural, beloved community by our actions that accountably dismantle racism and other oppressions in ourselves and our institutions. How does that settle with you? Does it feel overwhelming? Fearful? Frustrated? Do you feel empowered? After all, if this is one of our principles, then it beckons us into action. We may not, as individuals, have to subscribe to these seven principles, but I'm going to guess that most of us, if we know about them, use them to guide our lives in some way. So for me, if this were a principle, I would be called and invited and beckoned into doing this work. We often say in Unitarian Universalist churches that we have a living tradition, that this is a faith that is alive, that part of who we are is a willingness to change, to transform ourselves and our communities and our churches and our world. If you notice again your hymnal, the title is Singing the Living Tradition. The hymnal was created as an improvement to past hymnals. The language was changed on several of the hymns to be more inclusive. Readings were updated. Now, I love this hymnal. I always have, but not everyone does. And some songs were included that are considered now to be disrespectful, now that we know more, to be disrespectful to certain cultures. And we've been encouraged to sing some of these songs only if we contextualize them. And there are murmurings that it's time to upgrade even this hymnal. It's a living tradition after all. But I've been so frustrated lately, feeling like there's nothing I can do about so many things that happen on a daily basis that go against these principles. So the fact that this is a living tradition and that there's the proposal of an eighth principle gives me a glimmer of a way forward. We don't have to do it the way that it's always been done. We can change. We can add a new source or a new principle or a new holiday. And when that new principle is scary because we may fail, our living tradition calls us into a free and responsible search for truth and meaning. It encourages us to spiritual growth, both as individuals and in our congregations. So we can educate ourselves and be in our discomfort and cut each other some slack. That same living tradition calls upon us to trust each other, to hold each other in love and tenderness, to give ourselves permission to make mistakes, to do it imperfectly, whatever it is, and to find in and with each other and within ourselves that sense of mystery that leads to wonder and awe and joy and beauty, that makes us glad to be together and alive in this holy moment. May that be true all the moments of our lives. Blessed be, and amen.